The Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast.
Back to Folk. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champion. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
Yes, indeed. Here it comes. Another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
Red Sox explode in game one of the doubleheader versus the Orioles, scoring 19, but it wasn't always that far away. It looked like quite a close game until the eighth inning when a position player took the mound in a white flag surrender motion. I'm Nick the Voice, joined by Jim Delfino and Terry Cushman Jr., and we are the Bastards of Boston. Where are we starting with this one? I think there's a lot of good to talk about, but there's a lot of bitter to this suite as well.
Yeah, you know, as good as it was when you see the final score, if you know nothing else other than that, it was bad for a while. Bayo only lasted four innings, the absolute worst case scenario. You got a doubleheader later with a guy who also might not make it four full innings. So, you know, it worked out as far as that goes. And then you want to talk about exploding. It looked like Bregman's his quad. So it didn't explode. That would be dramatic, but he's going to miss some time by the looks of it.
Yeah, you know, he walked off the field, which was definitely the highlight of that moment. You know, I actually didn't catch that he was injured when he was just rounding the bag. It wasn't until he really waved to the dugout and ran pretty much straight for that tunnel when I knew that something was wrong. Hopefully it's a minor strain. But with a thing like this, I hear that it can be anything from, you know, 1 week to several months.
So a lot of it's going to really depend on what they do for continued diagnosis on it. Obviously, initially, when I first saw it, I thought that it might have been his calf. So there's two muscles that make up the calf. It's the gastrocnemius and the soleus. The soleus becomes your Achilles tendon. It looked like he was kind of given a little bit of access to that. So it was a little bit of gray area there. If you want to look at the light side of this, I would say is the fact, like Nick said, that he came off the field on his own is a good sign. He wasn't really grabbing at anything, which is another thing I picked up on. So there was a question of maybe it was a little bit more precautionary. The report came out pretty quickly. Usually in these instances, if there's a major injury, they kind of hold that information for a while. So we'll wait and see, because it doesn't necessarily mean that that's it. I think the bigger question is, how much time is he going to miss? And if it's just going to be the weekend series and he'll be back next week, in all probability, in a good case scenario, are they going to make any kind of roster decision in the meantime? And I think if you're looking at 4 or 5 days, potentially, you may want to throw him on the 10-day and see if we can start moving some bodies around and maybe potentially bring up one or two big names from the minors. One of the things that I was thinking about while this game was going on was maybe the possibility of, you know, speeding up Campbell's starting at first base. Let's get that going. Maybe moving Story to second. I mean, we've been clearly seeing he's not a shortstop anymore. He doesn't have the arm strength for shortstop. If we moved him to second and then brought Mayer up for shortstop, you know, that might be an option that we can go with. Now, as far as third is concerned, it's going to be interesting for me to say this, but I don't want to move Devers off of the DH spot anymore. He's just hitting the cover off the ball, and he's looking like an all-star. He's having one of the best offensive seasons as he's ever had. He's at .299 with 12 home runs now. So it might be a combination of Sogard, Yatoro for now, but I think, you know, in the short term, maybe Mayer's the way to go right now.
Yeah, you know, I was looking at, you know, all of our options as far as depth is concerned and whatnot, and my knee-jerk reaction was, oh, Devers, just grab the glove again, you know? But I agree with you. I think he's hitting the ball too well, and I really don't want to disrupt that. You look at the numbers. He's, you know, top of the league, top 10 in every meaningful stat pretty much, and that's even counting the absolutely abysmal start he got off to, you know? That, what was it? It was like a 15K stretch right at the front end of the season, and that's a distant memory at this point. That dude's amazing. 8 RBIs, 2 home runs, one of them a grand slam off a position player, but impressive nonetheless.
You know, a lot of people are wondering, you know, I think it was a quick knee-jerk reaction, no pun intended, that Devers could go to third, I mean, in a pinch, but Will Middlebrooks on the WEI broadcast mentioned you shouldn't mess with anything right now with him. He's just absolutely destroying it. And, you know, I agree with that. And when Campbell, when Bregman went down, see, I was working, but I was listening to it. And I think if you live in South Carolina, you have the slowest feed of any state, because I'm like one or two batters behind. And Bregman did happen to be up, and I saw stuff from the war room saying, oh boy, that's what Jason Kelly said. Jim said, oh shit. And I'm listening, and Bregman's up. So I'm like, oh no, I hope it's whatever it's about to be on my feed. I hope it's not about to be him. And sure enough, it was him. Luckily, it didn't sound overly dramatic on the radio. As Jim said, he did walk off under his own power. But instantly, like, thoughts in my head, like a million miles an hour, like, how much time are we missing? Is Meyer coming up? Is he going to play third? And even in my head, is Devers going to go to third in a pinch? Like, this is an emergency. That's your biggest key bat right there, aside from Devers. And then I'm even thinking way into the future here. I'm like, well, if he tore something, he's definitely opting in next year. And if you opt in next year, you're probably opting in the third year, because coming off of a major injury at age 32, 33, why would you expect a massive contract? So now, because of this, we're getting Bregman the whole time. And then on top of that, I'm like, John Henry's never going to sign a position player over the age of 30 ever again. Like, he's going to have to literally die before we see that ever again. So, like, just a million thoughts ran through my mind right there. But I think we're trending towards, hopefully, best case scenario. Maybe not the IL, maybe a brief stint on it.
Well, like, I brought up the fact that maybe you do the 10-day, and a lot of that's going to be kind of a complex situation as it relates to how much they really think there's, you know, how injured that is. If it's just a grade one strain, we don't know. But let's assume the best case scenario. He's going to miss tonight. He's going to probably miss the rest of the weekend, including even Monday. So you're already talking 3-4 days there. You know, you're not too far away removed from a 10-day IL stint. And there's no reason why they can't even retroactive that. So do we want to be without a bat for 3, 4, 5 games? That's where I start, you know, spinning the tires and saying, you know, maybe this is a good opportunity. And I just brought it up a few minutes ago. Fast forward to get, Campbell at first. He's not the greatest defender in any other position, second, left, and center. Get Meyer up here and put Story at second. I think that might be a really good quick fix, at least for maybe whatever time frame he could be on an IL stint for. What do you guys think?
Yeah, I agree wholeheartedly. And, you know, another added bonus of that is Meyer coming up in a very sort of low pressure environment, actually, knowing we're bringing you up because Bregman just went down. Let's get you a taste of Major League Baseball, you know, even before we're calling up, you know, the cavalry and hoping that they can save the team. Let's just bring you in and see how you do under the big lights.
Well, this would be the pitching staff to do it against. I mean, it's as soft as an entry as you could imagine. I think we're going on the road after, so theoretically that should be a little bit lower pressure. We're going to be in Milwaukee starting Monday, and you know, at a minimum, Meyer is a plus defender, maybe a plus, plus, plus defender. So at a minimum, you're going to get good defense. And why not? Why not do it? And I think that could, like I said last night, maybe help Christian Campbell. One of his buddies is up. Maybe that'll motivate him to start figuring some stuff out. But you better figure it out. Because, I mean, the first four innings of this game, I'm thinking, man, this ain't good. You know, this is worst case scenario. We're dropping games to Baltimore. We're under 500 by one game as of halfway through this game. And I'm just wondering, like, it's the floor is really falling out here until finally the offense went off, mostly Devers, but Sadon Rafaela just always comes through in a big moment if runners are in scoring position. And, you know, he had a couple of moments this series, but what do we do about Bayo?
Yeah. Well, I mean, typical heel fashion. That was the next, that's where I wanted to transition to. Here we go again. All right. I mean, it's hard to remember that this game was actually 2-0 Orioles for a little bit of time. And I'm sitting there watching it and I say, here we go. We can't even beat the Orioles. But to your point, Terry, I mean, you know, here we go again with another starter that can't. I mean, we used to complain about five innings. Now we're getting four. I mean, where does this go from here? I mean, he had a lot of traffic in, you know, six hits over the course of those four innings. But, you know, this is a guy that we're supposed to rely on as our, quote, number three starter to get us into the sixth or seventh inning. I just don't see it. And I don't know if we'll ever see it. I don't think he's ever going to be a front of the line starter. And I'm not talking about an ace, but a number two, number three. I don't think he's ever going to be there. I think he's going to be a number four guy. And I don't think it's going to be anything better than that. But this is really a problem because if this continues, we're going to continue to burn out that bullpen. And, you know, again, we did score a lot of these runs late, but at the same time, you use Bernardino, Whitlock, Wilson, and Slayton in a game that you, you know, scored 19 runs in. You can't do that. I mean, this can't be sustainable for the entire season. And we've seen this, we've watched this movie over and over again for the last few years. And you can't just go out at the trade deadline and try to find some schlep that's going to be, you know, a reliever for a couple of months. So a big, big problem. But, you know, I talked about it in the article today about Crochet. I'm still really upset about that, him being pulled after 5 1/3 innings and 85 pitches, because this is a guy that you need to rely on. He's a guy that's got to get you into the seventh or eighth every time out. You should expect him to be the difference maker between a 500 team and a team that's going to finish 10 over. And 10 over is probably going to get you in the playoffs. So as long as you're a 500 team and a guy like Crochet is going to be 10 over, he's going to put your whole entire team 10 over. That should get you in. So this is a big problem because outside of him, you've got Walker Buehler, who has had a pretty decent season to this point. But, you know, it seems like every time he goes out there, I still have this question mark as to how far he's going to be able to go. Is he going to be into the fifth and get taken out? I don't see him going seven. And then you've got the rest of the staff, the Giolitos of the world. You know, Dobbins has been okay, but I don't see him going seven. So I'm just worried about that bullpen. They're not getting a break.
Yeah, you know, I agree wholeheartedly again at that. With Bayo being one of my biggest disappointments, I think, of this year, him and Houck really right in tandem. I came into the season being very happy with our starting pitching depth, and yet, you know, losing Crawford and Fitz to those injuries, having them, you know, still not entirely sure on a return date. We know Fitz luckily is... He just had a good rehab game, and I think he was actually in the dugout with the guys tonight. But Houck now going to a phantom IL stint, Bayo regressing terribly. This is getting to a point where how can you send out a guy reliably every 5 days who can't promise you where his pitches are actually going to land? control has been an issue with him really ever since he came up, really his whole career. And the box score today, it wasn't even as bad as it could have been. You know, you look at 7 strikeouts, 1 walk, 2 runs on 6 hits, most of which were singles. You think that's okay. But 4 innings pitched, 87 pitches in 4 innings, you have to be better than that. You know, I looked at some of the sort of underlying metrics to try to find anything that could explain this. And really, all of his numbers are down. The slider and his changeup were the 2 big put-away pitches last year, and this year guys are not being fooled on them. The velocity is up on both, the changeup by nearly 2 miles per hour. His sinker and four-seamer are down in velocity, so the changeup is not really all that much of a change as it was last year. He's throwing the four-seamer more, and the whiff rate on that pitch is better than it was last year. All the other 3 are worse, significantly. But the put-away percentage is exactly the same. So you're taking a guy who came out last year, could strike out guys, could fool guys, wasn't great, but, you know, induced weak contact, had some problems with control. He was a project pitcher. And right now it seems like the glue and the paper clips have become undone. The project's falling apart because this is a guy who can't strike a guy out. He's walking a million, and he's blowing through his entire sort of gas tank before the 5th inning. It's really just not sustainable.
First 3 starts, he went 5 innings or more. He even got into the 7th inning on one of those. Since then, he hasn't gotten through 5 full 4 times in a row. My biggest thing, aside from the metrics, is he just doesn't have that killer instinct you need to go after guys, to finish them off, to impose his will on them. And he works out with Pedro every winter, and Pedro was that guy. You know, if a dude was crowding the plate, Pedro was going to buzz their chin with a fastball and push him back. Like, Bayo is just so soft. And he had a conversation, and again, I'm only seeing things on the radio, hearing things rather. I don't think anyone's seen anything on the radio before, but apparently there was a long conversation between him and Cora, and he was at what, 83, 84 pitches. So conceivably he could have come out for the 5th if they wanted to. Bernardino was warming, and I think Alex Cora just said, you know what? You don't have it tonight. You just don't have it. We're going to Bernardino. And that's what they did. And I guess once the offense took off and we had a pretty big lead by that point, he was kind of seen laughing and hanging out with Raffy. So I don't think it was like, I don't think like Cora was like destroying his soul or anything in that conversation. Maybe he needs that. I don't know, but he needs to toughen up. He needs to go after guys. He needs to get grittier. And if he can't do that, he is not a big market pitcher. He can pitch like that for Kansas City and maybe do okay if he wants to, but you can't pitch for the Boston Red Sox, and the Red Sox haven't even sniffed the month of October with Brian Bayo on the roster when he debuted in 2022. We just haven't gone back since. Is that a guy you want handling, you know, a big game like that? Because to me, it sounds like an automatic L.
Well, Terry, here's the problem with this. Whose fault is it? Is it
Andrew Brian? Bailey.
Is it right? Exactly. That's where I'm going. So it's like, is it Bayo's fault if he's working out with Pedro? Is it Bailey's fault? Is it just analytics? I mean, wherein lies the problem? How can they go from having a rotation that was basically lights out for 6 weeks last year, including Cutter Crawford into that mix, to all of a sudden, Hauk is demoted to a phantom IL stint and probably could lose his rotation spot because he's been just terrible. So what does Bailey do here? I mean, everybody said to me on Twitter, oh my God, we're getting the best pitching coach in the history. He's great, so on and so forth. I haven't seen it. I haven't seen one darn thing. So I don't know if they're too worried about spin rate, and this is the reason why so many of these guys are getting on the injured list to begin with, they're not letting them do what they need to do, and throw the fastball, still the best pitch in baseball. I don't care what you say. And if Breslow and Bailey are coming in and saying, well, you know, the reality is the fastball gets hit the hardest and the most pie, you know, it's a bunch of bullshit. I'm sorry for the swearing, but they gotta change that up.
Absolutely. Merlone actually said on Nesson, he said the same thing about the fastball. It's still the best pitch in the bigs. I mean, that thing is the bread and butter for pitchers going back how many years? It's tried and true. And we've seen our staff sort of reintegrate it this year, but not to much success. As it stands right now, Houck and Bayo are not a part of my October rotation. They aren't a part of my September, August rotation. They are guys you send out and you're going to lose games. I want Crochet every fifth day. I want a chance to win with him. Behind him, it's a motley crew, but I want Walker Buehler. I want Hunter Dobbins. I want eventually Cutter Crawford. I want Dick Fitz. That seems to be the common consensus from Red Sox fans in general, and I can't imagine the organization can see anything different. If they do see something different, I think they're just deluding themselves.
I pointed this out a couple shows ago, but you look at literally everyone that was here last year. Tanner Houck regressed. Brian Bayo has regressed. If Cutter Crawford was up, I'm boldly going to assume there'd be some regression there. Hopefully not a ton, but, you know, we may need him coming up. Who knows? You know,
he's the savior at this point.
He could be. And he always runs out of gas in August. So if you think about it, this could be very well timed. You know, he should be fit to go the rest of the year if his knee holds out. But there's been a lot of regression. Walker Buehler, you haven't really seen a big sample size, but I'm a little bit encouraged by him. And Garrett Crochet does kind of meet the criteria of an ace, but you look at that strikeout per nine, which is one of my favorite stats, 12.9 last year, that led all qualified starters in Major League Baseball. It's down to 10.3 this year. So a 2.6 drop, and 10.3 is still very good. You'll take that every year with any pitcher you have on the mound. That's still very good, but it's not as good. And I don't know if that's Andrew Bailey kind of messing with stuff. I don't know. Bailey came from the Giants. He was their pitching coach for a while. I'm pretty sure he was there for their 107 win season. So he's got that. And he came from the most pitcher friendly park in Major League Baseball. Fenway is a different animal. And he seemed to come in with like a one size fits all type package last year. And everybody drastically threw less fastballs. Even Nick Pivetta, he's got a fastball and a curveball, but it was mostly predicated on the fastball. He threw, you know, 96 to 98. And even he was down to about, you know, one third of his pitches were four seamers, and it got him injured. And I don't like that. I want a pitching coach to come in here and look at each guy individually. Okay, this is your strengths. This is your strengths. We're going to focus on this with you. We're going to focus on that with you. And just get after it. Like, don't reinvent the wheel.
And I agree. Sometimes it boils down to the simplest solution being the best. You take a guy's natural talents, you hone them, and you make him the best player he can be. You don't make him fit into any mold, any idea of what a pitcher should be throwing. You see what his arsenal includes, what his best weapons are, and you adapt to the game plan based on that.
So just to kind of switch gears a little bit back to the Bregman story. So Cora is, they did ask Cora about him. They said that, just tight. He won't play the second one. He'll get treatment. We'll know more tomorrow. If there's a silver lining there, it's sounding a little bit better than what maybe we were thinking about 20 minutes ago. The other part of that, too, is Marcelo Meyer is playing shortstop tonight for the Woo Sox.
Good, good. I was afraid it was going to be second base again because that's what he was penciled in at, actually, I thought. So they might have just made that decision on the fly, and I respect that. I mean, we're coming up, I saw on the two-day anniversary, the 7-year anniversary of Hanley Ramirez's DFAing back in 2018, 7 years ago. And that was a big moment, I feel, for the team. We were a great team up until that point. I remember seeing the news. It broke my heart. I loved Hanley as a guy, but he didn't put us in the best position to win. What are we going to do now?
With Meyer, to quote, to paraphrase my favorite comedian, there's a million reasons to play him at second base, and all of them are incorrect. Like, there's no reason to play him there. For as long as Trevor Story, for some unknown reason, he's in Pablo Sandoval territory right now with his contract, and I don't see an upward trajectory at all. Dude's completely washed. But I really was spewing about it before the game when I thought that was the biggest problem we had. But batting fifth is really what set me off there. But he's the shortstop. He's younger, he's more athletic, and nobody in our system can play a better shortstop than Marcelo Meyer. Let's stop messing with these kids. Trevor Story is in the way. Send him over to first base, put Campbell back at second, and let's go. I want Rhys Hoskins. I did a TikTok video on that last night, and it's the biggest TikTok video I've had so far. But if you're wondering, I was trying to ship Tanner Houck. I don't know if that makes sense or not, but it did for 5 seconds while I made that video. I don't know. But I don't mess with the kids.
You know, if the thing is going to be where they want to have Campbell play first base, I don't hate that idea because, again, I don't see him as being a very good defensive second baseman or center field. And frankly, I don't want to move Rafael out of there either. But here's the thing. When Xander Bogaerts was going to start coming up to the major leagues, they moved Stephen Drew. If I recall correctly, they moved Stephen Drew over to second base because the idea was, look, Bogaerts is our future. You're not. And the same thing is happening again here. You know, Meyer is their future. Story is not. I understand there's a big difference in salary from Stephen Drew to Trevor Story, but at the same time, I think they've got to rip the Band-Aid off and say, look, you're playing second base, Trevor. We're bringing up Meyer. We need more offensive punch, and we need someone that's going to be able to throw out major league runners going to first base. There's absolutely no reason why he couldn't have thrown out Acuna in that Mets series. It wasn't like he was in the hole or anything like that to get that ball. Every major league shortstop should have been able to throw him out.
The way it stands, Trevor Story is simply not a major league player. It's harsh to say, but it's true. I looked, he is currently ranked 17th in defensive value among qualified shortstops, and he is the line. He's the first of those 17 to have negative value defensively. Meanwhile, he's ranked 23rd among qualified shortstops in offensive value. And that's 23 out of 24 qualified. He has slow bat speed. He refuses to walk. He's chasing pitches. He's missing pitches. His whiff rate's horrific. He's striking out over 30% of the time. And for some reason, we keep rolling him out batting fifth. And sure enough, in the fifth inning today, back when the score was just 2-1, we had two men on, two outs, five hole, Trevor Story comes up. You can hear a tuba being played as he walks. It's ridiculous. And sure enough, he hits a routine ground out, and there was never any hope in my heart. His only hit today, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe it was against the position player. And that was the second time that he actually had to come up to bat to actually get that hit. The first time he was the first out, and the first out by a long shot. Luckily, the Red Sox were able to rally big, score 5 in the sixth, score 13 in the eighth, but it wasn't easy. You know, we used up Justin Slayton because Wilson couldn't get the job done. Luckily, Slayton was nails. Whitlock looked great. I saw that he actually adjusted his glove position. He might have been tipping his pitches prior based on that. So hopefully he can go back to being a lockdown reliever. There's a lot to like about this game, but there's, like I said, a lot of bitter with the sweep.
Trevor Story. For a team that scored 19 runs today, Trevor Story's batting average went down. Let that sink in.
I'm surprised there was any floor to fall out.
And his first at bat, which seemed critical at the time. There was runners on first and second, two outs. He comes up and strikes out swinging. He whiffs. And so I'm like, oh, here we go. Trevor Story
balls in the dark too, just about.
And then later on in the game, he draws a walk and it ended up being critical. I think he came home on that eventually in the inning. But I mentioned in the war room, I said, when Trevor Story walks, it feels like he hit a grand slam. You know, it's just, it is what it is. But all right. So tonight we have Lucas Giolito. I'm not seeing a starter for them anywhere, but it could be a bullpen game. Here's the sad part. If I can find it. I'm looking for his ERA. Here it is. This is the ominous thing with Giolito. He's made four starts on the season, two at home, two on the road. On the road, he has a 2.84 ERA. At home, 14.09. So not good. This would be a great game to straighten that out. We're at 500 even. I'd love to come out of this being above 500 with a couple more favorable pitching matchups tomorrow and Sunday with Dobbins and Buehler. So he needs to figure it out. I don't, with Hauk being, you know, phantom IL'd, whatever you want to call it.
I mean, see just 30 minutes ago, Cooper Criswell was called up as the 27th man. So we at least have someone to sort of go the distance in case Giolito does sort of implode tonight.
Yeah.
I'm surprised too, because I thought Charlie Morton was supposed to start this game. But to Terry's point, at least ESPN is reporting no name right now. So,
and MLB says TBD. So, literally,
pretty good.
Orioles Twitter might have it, but I don't have the word.
TBD's ERA can't be worse than Charlie Morton's. Yeah, I know that
much. He's pretty good. I like TBD and I like cash considerations.
I saw we just traded him. Damn shame.
I saw somebody with a jersey on. It was a Red Sox jersey during maybe, might have been 2021, and that was the name on the back, Cash Considerations, with whatever number they had.
But I love that.
Yeah. But all right, so we will wrap on that. We actually weren't planning on to do this show, but there was a couple of real big topics. So do you want to sneak something else in there, Jim?
Yeah, if anybody is interested, we have our Substack page with articles that are being done pretty much on a daily basis from most of us. And they're great articles. We'd love you to join. It's free to join. And we do have some great options on there for membership too, including some giveaways. So definitely take a look at one of the links to our Substack page. I think you'll really enjoy the articles.
For sure.
All right, and we'll be back in a handful of hours to discuss what did happen in that second game. So hopefully it'll be a happy show. Take care.
Fingers crossed.